Today's WBFO brief was recorded at around 8:30 in the morning. This is WBFO News.
Byron Brown's decision to leave the mayor's office will create a representation issue for Buffalo's South District. The district's current council member is Council President Chris Scanlon, who, in following the city charter, will become acting mayor. However, the charter does not provide a process to replace Scanlon, an issue that was addressed at Tuesday's council session. A resolution that passed by a 6-3 vote directs the city's Corporation Council to draft a charter amendment to resolve the matter. October is Spina Bifida Awareness Month, and in this hour's Disability Beat, we'll hear from Elise Carlson, who discusses how Spina Bifida Western New York helped her with mobility issues with an attachment for her wheelchair.
Just letting them know that that is out there. If you have a manual wheelchair, we have this device that can help you get over grass and gravel.
According to the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, Spina Bifida occurs in one in every 2,875 births. Emily Watkins has this morning's Disability Beat at 6:43 and 8:43, and also this afternoon on All Things Considered. Disabilities Beat is available at WBFO.org, along with plain language descriptions and transcripts. Erie County residents should expect a property tax reduction in 2025. That's according to County Executive Mark Poloncarz after he submitted the revenues and expenses report to the County Comptroller's Office. Poloncarz expects to lower the property tax rate per $1,000 by 11 cents to $3.28, a level that is the 11th lowest rate of 57 counties in New York State. Poloncarz will release the 2025 county budget later this month. An effort is underway to reduce Erie County's number one source of greenhouse gas emissions, personal transportation. That's according to the Coalition for Economic Justice Buffalo, which will hold a press conference later today to highlight the Week Without Driving campaign and raise awareness of the one-third of Americans who can't or don't drive. Assemblymember Karen McMahon, State Senator Sean Ryan will join members of Buffalo Transit Riders United and Go Bike in calling for passage of legislation that wants a 20% reduction in vehicle miles traveled in the state by 2050. An tract of 1,200 acres in Cattaraugus County is now part of the first state forest created in the region in over 60 years. The State Department of Environmental Conservation has established the land in the town of Yorkshire as Blue Hill State Forest. Formerly operated as Blue Mount Ski Resort until 1979, the land was acquired for $2.1 million through the state's Environmental Protection Fund.
This WBFO Brief podcast is made possible by Canisius University, where high-flying grifts find a top-flight education. For the last 8 years, Canisius has been recognized on U.S. News' list of best colleges and universities. Learn more at canisius.edu.
Hi, I'm Emily Watkins, and this is the WBFO Disabilities Beat. October is Spina Bifida Awareness Month. This week on The Beat, I'm joined by Nick Heilig and Elise Carlson from Spina Bifida of Western New York to discuss their work providing mobility aid grants. This conversation has been edited for length and clarity, but you can read more about SBWNY on our website at WBFO.org.
My name is Elise Carlson. I'm 39 years old. I'm one of the board members of Spina Bifida of Western New York. I've been with the board since its founding.
My name is Nick Heilig. I am the president of Spina Bifida Western New York. I've been with the board for about 2 years. I'm 43 years old, obviously living with Spina Bifida. And a little bit about our organization. Our mission is to empower people that are affected by Spina Bifida, just to live full and enrich lives, you know, advocate for with them, support them, and just have a strong community around us. We do, you know, promote inclusion and, you know, work with both children, adults, families in Western New York that are affected by Spina Bifida. And we are an all-volunteer organization, and we do support the 8 counties of Western New York.
And as we're talking, I'm remembering that maybe not everyone is familiar with what Spina Bifida is and how it impacts people's lives. I'm wondering if you would feel comfortable talking a little bit more about what Spina Bifida is and What are some of the barriers that people with spina bifida face in society?
Me personally, I can walk assisted with braces and crutches. I do use a wheelchair for long distances, and I can transfer. But getting in and out of buildings, whether that's with my crutches or in a wheelchair, is difficult. If there's stairs, even one stair can be difficult at times. Transportation is a challenge. If I didn't have my mom, I probably wouldn't be out as much as I would if I didn't have spina bifida, because one of just of where I happen to live, and otherwise I don't have a car. So in that respect, it limits me as well.
Just for, you know, people who might not know what spina bifida is, it occurs when the spine and the spinal cord don't form properly. And spina bifida in Latin means split spine. So like the nerves and the spinal cord and the spine don't form properly. So it's a type of neural tube defect, birth defect. And as far as, you know, overall limitations, if you want to call it that, you know, I am in a wheelchair full time. I am able to transfer really well and things like that. Also, I'm lucky that I do have my mom for transportation and things like that, because public transportation is difficult, especially in the winters in Western New York, things like that. So from that respect, you know, I am lucky to have her for, you know, things and to go out, doctor's appointments and different events and things like that as well. But a lot of it for me, like day-to-day stuff, yes, you'll have challenges and things like that, but also I'm the type that will look at the positives and things like that. And, you know, lucky that I am able to be involved with this organization, to be able to, you know, do the things that I am able to do. You know, we have our walks, we have the meat raffle. You know, I am lucky to be able to do the things that I have been able to do, even with those challenges and having 30 surgeries at this point in my life. But, you know, you got to make do with what you have and things like that. That's the way that I've always looked at it.
Thank you. And thank you for sharing so much. You know, I asked that question about barriers because I think that a lot of times people see people with disabilities and they think about what barriers we might have because of our conditions. But I know there's also a lot of barriers that exist because of just the way society is set up. And I know that you both use mobility aids. And I know something that your organization has worked on quite a bit is helping people access more mobility aids, because I know insurance can put limits on what people can obtain, or you can only get a wheelchair and you can't also get crutches, different limitations like that. So I'd love to hear more about the work you've done as far as mobility aid grants and why that's so important, especially to the community of people with spina bifida.
It's definitely important. And, you know, as we've started to grow, I mean, we're still relatively small and have tried to, you know, gain an outreach and things like that. But we do have, like I said, the grants available for individuals to whether it's mobility aids, you know, any other types of assistive things that they may need, things like that. And just support overall is something that I think is really important. You know, we might not have the answers to everything either, but, you know, we'll also try to find the answers that we don't have and vice versa.
And I got my free wheel through this organization, through some had been donated, and we're trying to expand that to a broader coalition, a broader group of people. So just letting them know that is out there. If you have a manual wheelchair, we have this device that can help you get over grass and gravel, and so you can go so many more places
Could you talk a little bit more about the size of the grants you give out and some of the devices or needs that that has gone towards? Because I know the free will is something that, from my understanding, insurance doesn't usually cover, but like you mentioned, it really does help people have more access and freedom.
As far as the grants, they're generally $500 at this point, as we are growing, things like that. But as far as the grants go, you know, crutches, braces, there are limits in terms of insurance and, you know, how often they'll cover things. So somebody who needs what they need because they're outgrowing their current situation, you know, that's something that we would always also take a look at in terms of the needs. Because as far as insurance goes, I think it's every 4 to 5 years for certain equipment that you can go for. So especially when, you know, somebody's going through a growth spurt or something like that, that might need something quicker, you know, that bit might help them and to, you know, advance what they need and things like that.
We have caps on our grants, but I think we would work with the individual to get them what they need.
You can listen to the Disabilities Beat segment on demand, view a transcript and plain language description for every episode on our website at WBFO.org.
The Bills coaches take accountability and put Sunday's loss behind them. The Sabres preseason has come to an end, and a battle of the bridge is set for tonight. I'm Jack Bruiser. This is The Scoreboard for Wednesday, October 2nd. In life, I believe we all deserve opportunities to redeem ourselves after making mistakes, so long as we own up to our wrongdoing and take full accountability. In a remote meeting with the media on Monday, Bills offensive coordinator Joe Brady owned up to his decision to run a poorly chosen trick play in the third quarter of their Sunday night loss in Baltimore, one that he says ultimately cost the team the game.
Pretty bad play call. I mean, there's no way to sum that up. And it not even is a bad play call just because of the result of the play, but just, you know, I try to pride myself on like a feel of the flow of the game and how things are going. And even if we were able to get that off, and even if we were able to do anything with it, it wasn't the right timing for the play. And, you know, I got to have a better feel and understanding, okay, hey, you know, different D-line in the game, you know, I've had their backup D-line in the game, you know, we looked that we kind of were going to get, and then boom, as soon as I see that they're switching their D-line, as soon as I see that, I got to get out of the play. But yeah, poor play call and ultimately kind of costed us a football game right there.
Now that we're more than 48 hours past that game's conclusion, the game is in the rearview mirror with the lessons learned from it in the forefront of the decision makers' minds. As any coach worth their salt will tell you, it's not about when you get punched in the mouth, it's about how you respond. Buffalo has a perfect chance to do that this week against a high-caliber AFC team. The Bills head to Houston for a Sunday afternoon meeting with Stephon Diggs and the 3-1 Houston Texans. It's extremely rare that a newly hired NHL coach gets to spend 2 weeks with their new team intimately halfway across the globe. It's equally as rare that a newly hired AHL coach gets to know his new players intimately during the preseason and serve as the coach in charge. Lindy Ruff and Mike Leone were given exactly those opportunities, respectively, with the Buffalo Sabres and the Rochester Americans. With just 3 days of practice and 2 preseason games in Buffalo, Ruff and the Sabres had no time to ease into training camp before heading over to Europe as part of the NHL's Global Series. That quick start allowed Ruff to be hard on his new players from day one, which is an example of the accountability the players asked for following last season's conclusion. While Ruff could be hard on the group in that week before flying to Germany, it's the time he's spent with the team since leaving the continent that could prove to be a difference maker in the Sabres' early season. Going to Oktoberfest with the players in Munich, exploring museums with them in Czechia, every minute spent as a group away from the rink gives everyone, Coach Ruff and new players alike, a chance to bond and get to know each other before embarking on the season ahead. Meanwhile, in North America, Rochester Americans head coach Mike Leone has had the unique chance to run every practice and take his role as the bench boss for the remainder of the preseason. While the Sabres took the expected NHL lineup with them, a majority of players left behind signed, will be in the lineup for Coach Leone all season in the AHL. Getting reps against mixed lineups of NHLers and minor leaguers is even more helpful for Leone to show his group the things they're doing well against better competition will only be more apparent when playing teams of their own caliber. Leone's team went 3-1 in their 4 preseason games. The Sabres open the NHL season with back-to-back games against New Jersey this weekend in Prague, and then Rochester's season begins Sunday at Syracuse. In college volleyball, the Niagara Purple Eagles host the Canisius Golden Griffins for the first installment of the Battle of the Bridge in this scholastic year tonight. The two Metro Atlantic Athletic Conference foes both started league play with back-to-back victories this past weekend, each in their home gyms. Niagara holds a 23-20 lead in the all-time series history, having defeated the Griffs twice last season. First serve at the Gallagher Center is tonight at 6 p.m. Week 4 of the high school football season is in the books with standout performances across Western New York. Among others recognized by the Connolly Cup Committee, CSP's Bryce Hinsdale received a nomination following his performance on Friday Night Lights, aiding the Wolfpack's victory over Franklinville-Ellicottville. Hinsdale had 2 interceptions and nearly 100 receiving yards, plus a touchdown in the win. The full list of Connolly Cup nominees from Week 4 is available at WBFO.org. This has been The Scoreboard for Wednesday, October 2nd. I'm Jack Cruiser for WBFO Sports.
Don't forget to like or subscribe so you can help others find this podcast. And if you love it, leave a review too. The WBFO Brief Podcast and the award-winning journalism of WBFO's news team are made possible by our members. Thank you for listening.